Hello and welcome to Under New Management, the podcast that examines new and notable management research that can enhance your effectiveness as a leader in your organization. I'm Mike Johnson from the Foster School of Business at the University of Washington in Seattle. In today's episode, I talk with Niro Sivanathan, who is finishing up his PhD at Northwestern University in Chicago and will soon be on the faculty at the London Business School. We talk about a paper that he has in press at the journal Organizational Behavior and Human Decision Processes that looks at the problem of escalation of commitment in decision-making. Niro Sivanathan, welcome to Under New Management.
Hi, Mike. Great to be here.
Great to have you here. Now, Niro, your paper examines the concept of escalation of commitment. Can you explain that concept to us?
Sure. So escalation of commitment refers to the phenomenon where individuals increase their investment in a decision despite evidence suggesting that their initial decision was probably incorrect. So you could imagine a decision maker who has allocated resources towards a particular goal and then received feedback that that goal was not achieved, now facing this unambiguous choice of whether further resources will bring about the goal the decision maker continues with, or, if you will, escalate his or her original investment. And this is often informally referred to as throwing good money after bad. And also viewed through a different lens, you can think of this as an anomaly to rational decision making, because in that individuals should ignore costs already incurred and only consider costs that may change as a result of one's future decision.
Also referred to as sunk costs.
That's correct.
Yeah.
And it's also important to note that although we think of investments in terms of money, escalation of commitment refers to any investment in resources. So ranging from time, energy, skill, human lives, etc. And because it cuts across all forms of resources, escalation of commitment proves to be a sort of a ubiquitous bias found across multiple domains. So for instance, it has been documented in financial decisions, human resource allocation, auctions, military involvement in protracted conflicts, sports, and the list goes on.
All right. Well, could you give us an example or two?
Sure. So let me give you a couple examples. The first that comes to mind is Nick Leeson. So Nick Leeson was a hotshot trader in the Singapore International Monetary Exchange. He was one of the head traders at Barings Bank. In 1992, I believe, he held a risky position and lost roughly £2 million. Instead of cutting his losses, what he did was he invested further in that position in hopes of recouping his losses. 3 years later, by the time he got on an airplane to flee the country, that £2 million loss had mushroomed to £827 million. So he single-handedly brought down the oldest merchant bank in England. And more recently, Brian Hunter's crash and burn at the hedge fund Amaranth also comes to mind. So he held a position that predicted natural gas prices would rise. Despite evidence to the contrary, he stuck to his commitment and lost $6 billion. Again, and as I mentioned earlier, this bias is not just simply limited to organizational decision-making, but also transcends to everyday, mundane decisions. So one common example is that's probably likely occurred to myself and to you and others is waiting for a bus that is late. So having waited, let's say, 20, 30 minutes past its scheduled arrival, individuals then debate spending further resources by waiting longer or to invest in another method of transportation, such as a taxi. But people often escalate by honoring the already invested 30 minutes of waiting by waiting even longer for the bus.
Well, clearly this is something that stands in contrast, as you mentioned, kind of the rational decision that should be made in this situation. And so your study looked at kind of the reasons that people escalate commitment and not make these rational decisions and ways to overcome that. And specifically, you look at self-justification and self-affirmation. So could you talk briefly about those and what effects you expected them to have on escalation of commitment?
Sure, of course. So escalation of commitment now has accrued about a little bit over 30 years worth of research. And out of the various sort of economic, social, psychological explanations for it, the one that is documented or has been documented repeatedly is this notion, as you mentioned, is psychological desire for self-justification. It was originally proposed by Barry Stock. It suggested that individuals are generally motivated to view oneself, if you will, in a positive light and want to appear rational. So when their initial decision is met with negative feedback, this positive self is threatened, which then activates this need to justify their initial decision. And one way to do this is to invest further in one's original course of action in the hopes that it turns around and proves their initial decision to be correct one all along. So sort of like Nick Leeson or Brian Hunter.
Right.
So the idea here is that the need to protect our positive view as good, wise, rational, etc., motivates us to seek out avenues to justify our past investments. And it's this need to self-justify that's this sort of powerful engine that drives us to non-rationally escalate past action. And this self-justification motive then has been proven across essentially a myriad of studies.
But now self-affirmation, you suggest, is a way perhaps to overcome self-justification?
Right, so that's exactly correct. So using self-justification as a starting point, my co-authors Dan Molden, Adam Glinsky, and Julian Koo wondered if decreasing the need for self-justification would help individuals de-escalate their commitment. And since justification is motivated by self-threat, our focus in the paper, as you suggest, was to seek out methods that either shield the self from feeling this threat of negative feedback or providing individuals avenues to help repair the wounded ego, if you will, as a result of the self-threat. So at this juncture came in the idea of self-affirmation. So one overarching method to protect the self is what Claude Steele refers to as self-affirmation motive. So what he suggests is that we have this primary motive to protect the overall worth and integrity of the self, and we want to see ourselves as essentially good people. So this perception is threatened when the receiver receives messages to the contrary. So when a decision maker receives negative feedback, that's contrary to their view of themselves as a rational decision maker. So when faced with threat, one can either directly counteract that threat or seek alternate sources of self-worth not being threatened. So if you will, within an escalation arena, increasing commitment towards a failing course of action is an attempt to directly counteract and reaffirm the correctness of their initial decision. However, we wondered what would happen if individuals were given opportunity to indirectly affirm and repair the self. So our general prediction was that those individuals given opportunities to restore their self-worth by affirming on positive traits or global levels of self-esteem or ability should feel less need and need to justify their past decisions in the face of negative feedback.
So in other words, people with higher self-esteem would be less likely to escalate their commitment.
That's correct. That, in fact, was our primary prediction for study one.
Well, can you tell us how you went about testing these effects?
Sure, yeah. So in our first study, we were interested in seeing if individuals who have greater resource for self-affirmation, so it's measured by sort of their global levels of self-esteem, were less likely to escalate. So here, participants acting in the role of the vice president of an R&D firm are asked to allocate resources between two divisions. After they make their initial investment, they receive feedback suggesting that their decision lost the company money. They are then given additional resources to reinvest in either one of two divisions. So individuals having received negative feedback and motivated to self-justify are likely to reinvest a greater proportion of that second investment into their initial choice.
Mm-hmm.
And this is exactly what we found. However, when individuals with high self-esteem who are allowed to ruminate and draw upon this resource of self-worth after receiving negative feedback, they were less affected by this negative feedback and therefore were less likely to escalate than those individuals with low self-esteem. Presumably, so I should also add that they invested roughly $2 million less in the previously invested division.
In the failing division.
That's correct.
Mm-hmm.
And this is because individuals with low self-esteem have less pool of resources they can draw upon to boost their feelings of self-worth. So here we see that when individuals have an alternate avenue to mobilize their self-worth, they felt less need to justify past failures.
Okay. And in study two, you looked at people's values?
That's correct. So in study two, using the exact same methodology, we moved away from sort of this notion of global feelings of self-worth by examining if opportunities to affirm a cherished or important value would help bolster the self. So these values could be tied to politics, religion, social outlook, philosophy, etc. And the findings from the study were consistent with our initial study and showed that participants, when given opportunities to ruminate over a cherished value after receiving self-threat, were far less likely to escalate their commitment than individuals who were allowed to ruminate on values that were of least importance to them. So here they escalated almost $4 million more when not allowed to ruminate on a cherished value. So again, the idea here is that providing decision makers alternate avenues to restore and mobilize the wound itself, either through global affirmations, as was the case in study one, or values that they cherish, seems to help neutralize the threat and reduce the need to justify bad decisions.
So in study three, you looked at the specificity of the feedback to the decision maker.
That's correct, Mike. So study three highlights the paradoxical and counterintuitive effects of self-affirmation as a vehicle to de-escalate one's commitment. So in this study, participants were placed in the role of a manager recruiting an employee, and after they make their hiring decision and learn that a candidate that they chose had been performing poorly, participants either received affirming feedback about their abilities to make complex decisions, so this is a feedback that is relevant to their failed hiring choice, or they received affirming feedback on their creativity and innovation, a trait irrelevant to their failed hiring choice.
Okay.
Following this, the managers were asked to evaluate the employees and decide how much additional time and resources they would commit to the employees. So here, they were asked to rate the employees' promotability, how much time they would spend training them, etc.
Mm-hmm.
What we find is that individuals who receive affirmation on an ability such as creativity, which is not relevant to the failing decision, they tended to de-escalate their commitment to the candidate. So here the results are similar to study one and two. However, when individuals receive affirmation directly relevant, such as decision-making ability, to their failing decision, it further fuels escalation.
Interesting.
So in fact, it fuels it so much that it's even more so than individuals who receive no affirmation. And the reason for this paradoxical effect lies in the fact that the affirming traits and abilities specifically relevant to the threat itself does not provide an indirect mean for restoring self-worth. Instead, what it does is it reminds the individual of a self-standard that they fail to meet and as a result exacerbates the problem. So imagine, for instance, being told to write an essay against the funding for disabled students,
okay,
which clearly calls into question one's compassion. Now, after writing this, someone tries to comfort you by reminding you that you are, in actuality, a compassionate person.
Mm-hmm.
This, unfortunately, does not help restore your wounded identity, but rather highlights the standard that you failed to meet and heightens the need to self-justify. So, ironically, managers who follow the generally sage advice of providing employees avenues to save face by reassuring their competence as a good decision maker are in fact likely to feed the decision maker's self-doubt and justification needs.
And escalate their commitment as a result.
That's exactly correct.
What, is there something that managers can do in their personal interactions with employees to help them de-escalate their commitment?
Sure. So drawing on the results of the first two studies and even the last would suggest that if a manager plans on intervening as a way to help a individual de-escalate, their positive feedback should either be general in nature, whereby you're boosting their ego at the global level, or you're providing feedback on their abilities or traits that are not relevant to the current failure. By giving them positive feedback on traits relevant to their current failure, you run the risk of, as I mentioned earlier, highlighting that failure further and fueling greater escalation.
So in the examples of the financial traders you gave before, after these people had made perhaps some bad decisions on failing investments, that some feedback from a manager might have been kind of, hey, you know, you're overall a good person, or you know, you're good at some of these other things, but not specifically on this decision.
Sure. So what this would suggest is last thing you want to do is give feedback on their financial acumen.
Mm-hmm.
What you want to do is give them feedback on some other domain or a arena where they're actually quite competent, but is unrelated to their current financial mishap.
Okay, great. Well, Nero, what's the bottom line for managers?
So I think our current research, and suggested by the title, demonstrates both the promise and peril of self-affirmation as a strategic tool in helping decision makers de-escalate their commitment. And although the process of self-affirmation generally mobilizes one's resource to help diminish self-threat in escalation situations, our work also provides a systematic framework, if you will, for when such attempts at self-affirmation may inadvertently draw attention to self-standards that have not been met and paradoxically increase feelings of threat and escalation. So the takeaway then is that any implementation of self-affirmation as a vehicle to reduce self-threat truly needs to be indirect for it to be most effective in de-escalating commitment.
Great. Well, we've been talking with Nero Sivanathan, soon to be of the London Business School. This is great research, Nero. Thanks for joining us on the podcast.
Many thanks, Mike. It was a pleasure.
Thank you for downloading Under New Management, a podcast of the Organizational Behavior Division of the Academy of Management. The OB division has over 5,000 members dedicated to the science and practice of organizational behavior.
For more information about the OB division, visit www.obweb.org. For more information about the Academy of Management and its over 17,000 members worldwide, visit www.aomonline.org. Computer support for this podcast is provided by Vu Tran.